Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Great show lined up for you. I think we're up to show 780 or so, and glad to have an interesting show lined up. And it's different, so I think you'll like it a lot. Jeff Hayden is our guest. He's a speaker, LinkedIn influencer, that social media business thing that all of us business folks are on, if you haven't heard of that. And he's also a ghostwriter, contributing editor for Inc. magazine. And he is just a, you know, I thought I was producing a lot of content in terms of the things I do with writing, but good grief, Jeff is a writing machine. He writes for Inc. He does the ghostwriting. He's got an ongoing LinkedIn posts that are really interesting. And we're going to talk about a couple of those. The book, first though, know that there is a book that he really speaks to a lot of what we're going to be talking about on today's program. Transform, dramatically improve your career, business, relationships, and life one simple step at a time. And I am excited to welcome Jeff to the program. Welcome, Jeff.
Hi, David. How are you?
I'm all right. You're ready to go.
Yeah, it's nice of you to say that I'm prolific writing-wise, but if you're up to 780 broadcasts, you have talked way more than me.
Well, I my wife says I talk way too much, but you know, it's got to go somewhere. So I guess better for my listeners to hear all that than the family, but. But listen, I do respect your writing because, I mean, I'm looking at, you've got over 50 nonfiction books, 6 Amazon Business Investing number ones, hundreds of articles and reports. So right back at you, man.
Oh, thank you.
All right. And Inc. is no slouch of a magazine. Inc. magazine has an outstanding reputation, and you have been doing that. And of course, LinkedIn, for the folks that don't really know about LinkedIn, maybe that are you're not tuned into that whole social business circle. Business people especially, really look to LinkedIn for a lot of resources. So again, your posts are very good in that area. We're really glad to be able to talk about them. All right, well, let's do this, Jeff. I've got a couple things that struck me here of late that I saw, and then we just had to have you on our program. That's really the secret here, is we saw some posts. I'm like, got to talk to Jeff about that.
Cool.
So let's do that. So here's one that ties in really nice. I know you wrote about this back in the middle of March, the Ides of March, March 15th. You don't have to be rich to retire happy. In fact, far from it. And the reason that one struck me is so many people that I talk to, you know, that are trying to plan their financial future, they come to me for help, and I'm glad to do that. That's what I do every day. And to a person, Jeff, to a person, regardless of how much money they got, the underlying idea or thought is, golly, if I just had a little more, this would be really easy. No matter how much they've got,
right?
I don't care if they've got $10 million. They say the same thing. If they don't say it the same way, it's, you know, golly, if I just had a little more, if I'd worked a little harder, I'd done this, I'd done that. So I guess my point is, if we can take some of your perspective on this, I think it would help people to understand that they don't have to have a bazillion dollars.
Well, I guess the biggest problem, maybe it's one of perspective, I suppose. But if you are thinking about retirement, then it's very easy to fall into the trap of "I need more" because you're used to what you have. It's kind of like moving into a big house. You get a big house, and 4 months later, it's a normal house, and you start needing bigger houses. And I guess that's, from a perspective point of view, it's like that when you're planning to retire. But the data that I used to populate this article comes from a guy who surveyed hundreds of retirees, and they were retired. So they're actually looking at what retirement life is like as opposed to looking forward and thinking what it might be like.
Right.
And so what he found is that the money part, while certainly important, paled in comparison to a lot of other factors. And, well, like, for instance, he had people say whether they were happy, somewhat happy, or unhappy in their retirement. And the difference between being happy was like $8,000 a year in income. So happy to say moderately happy. And then another six or so down to I'm unhappy. So while $6,000 or $8,000 a year is a lot of money, it's not millions of dollars, and it's not hundreds of thousands of dollars. So those incremental differences don't really make that much difference once you get to a certain level. In his research, it came out that happy retirees averaged $82,000 in total income as a retired person. So you know, you add in Social Security, maybe you've still got a pension if those mm-hmm. things still exist.
Yeah.
They're becoming fewer and farther between. You know, a little 401k stuff.
Yeah.
Whatever your, maybe some part-time jobs and stuff, and that's household income, not individual. So,
okay.
You know, if you add that up, you can probably do the math quicker than me, but you don't need as much in terms of assets to be able to generate that a year as you might think. And you definitely don't need that $10 million that you kind of cited early on.
Yeah, I think that when you do add up what's there for a lot of people, you know, you can get to half of that pretty quickly. So it's and then people are going to be drawing. Some people do still have pensions,
right?
And there are, of course, the, you know, the investment accounts and drawing on them, or annuities, or whatever they may have that give them income. And so once they get to that, it, like you said, it doesn't take so much money, and a lot of the other things really play into their retirement happiness a lot more.
Right.
One of the other ones I know that you mentioned is owning their own home.
Did yep.
that had a big factor, big weight in this equation?
Yeah, that was a big factor. And actually being close to paying off your mortgage or having it paid off, that was a huge deal. And what's interesting is that the people that considered themselves happy, their average home value was about $300,000, which again is a very nice home.
Sure.
But it's not a palatial estate.
Right.
And so, you know, you can argue the money side of having your mortgage paid off, depending on what your interest rate is and lots of other factors. You know, there are reasons why sometimes it doesn't make sense to pay off your mortgage too soon. But I guess there's that mental easing of pressure to say, you know what, I'm retired and I don't have a house payment. You know,
that's
a peace of mind thing that must contribute greatly to saying, you know what, I'm pretty tickled.
Well, I think that's a lot of it, Jeff. I think it's the pressure, and it's the, even if somebody has, you know, is about to pay off their home mortgage, or they have paid it off, or maybe they've refinanced it and done some home equity conversion, and they've done a reverse mortgage or something else. However they get to the point of not having a payment that
right.
they're responsible for, that's where that comes in, right?
Yep.
And that's a big part of it, and I've seen people have that situation. Now, the other one, which I thought was interesting, and of course, this is a lot of what I do, so this struck me as very, very much spot on, is this is the diversification of retirement income. The happiness was correlated with people having more than one source
right.
of income.
Yeah, and I think I feel sure that that's also a peace of mind kind of thing, because if all my income eggs are in one basket, I'm really nervous about that basket.
Yeah.
So the research on this showed that happy retirees have two and usually three sources of retirement income. But that doesn't mean you need three jobs or whatever. You know, one of those can be Social Security. One
mm-hmm.
of those can be maybe you sold the business you had. Maybe it's your pension, like we talked. Maybe it's 401k stuff, part-time jobs. There's all kinds of different places where it came from. And it almost appeared that the amount of money you made from each was less important than the fact that you knew you had separate streams. Because, again, you know, if something happens to one, you're still okay with some of the others.
I think that's where people's concern over Social Security, of course, plays in, because for a lot of people, that Social Security does represent a significant portion of their total income, Jeff. And I think that's where some of the stress comes from, looking
right.
at Social Security and where it is.
Right.
But you're spot on, and I've seen people physically relax when they realize they've got the Social Security, okay, but they've got other sources of income. And when I build a plan for them and I show them, you're getting income from these different sources and here's how and why, and people just go, oh, thank God, I don't have to depend on just one thing.
Right. And I think what that also does, and it leads to another of the points in the research, is when you feel better about the things that maybe could happen to you, which is, you know, like what if there is no Social Security, or what if this happens, or what if that happens, when you've got a diverse stream of income, then you're a little more relaxed about, you know, the impact of outside events.
Mm-hmm.
That can then allow you to focus on what you do out in the world. And happy retirees in this survey, all of them felt they had a well-defined understanding of their quote-unquote purpose in life. So they weren't just retired. They weren't just sitting. They were out actively doing something. And it didn't matter they didn't have to be Mother Teresa. You know, they didn't have to be out trying to save the world. They
yeah.
just knew what it was that they wanted to do that made them feel good about themselves. 90% of the happy retirees said they were very or extremely comfortable with their sense of purpose. And on the flip side, of the unhappy folks, almost 90% of them said they were slightly or not comfortable with their sense of purpose.
Hmm.
So knowing what it is you want to be doing and still kind of having that little internal mission, that's a huge thing, and I think that's easier to do when you're not as worried about external events maybe changing your life.
Good point. I mean, if you've left the workforce, which was for a lot of people their purpose,
yep,
or a big part of their purpose, now they're like, okay, now what?
Which is kind of funny when you think about it, because you talk to a lot of people that are nearing retirement, and all they want is to get out of that job.
Yeah.
And yet that job was their purpose.
Sounds to me a little bit of the...
You know, that's a little odd if you think about it.
Well, it's a little bit of a case of the grass is greener, right?
Right.
All
yeah,
right.
Probably so.
That's part of it. Jeff Hayden, ladies and gentlemen, and we're going to grab a quick break. We'll be right back.
Retirement planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. It also doesn't have to be done in a hurry or with sales pressure. Since starting Holland Financial in 1997, it has been David Holland's mission to help individuals, couples, and families plan their futures with personalized financial planning. David puts himself in his client's shoes and recommends products and services he would choose for himself or his family. If you'd like to learn more about Holland Financial or to schedule a one-on-one consultation with David, simply call 671-PLAN. That's 671-PLAN. No cost or obligation. Or visit planstronger.com.
And we're back with Jeff Hayden, helping us understand some of the issues or concerns or measures of happiness as well. For you don't have to be rich to retire happy. That was Jeff's column back from March 15th. And to get the whole shooting match, get his book, Transform, Dramatically Improve Your Career, Business, Relationships, and Life, One Simple Step at a Time. I like that. And of course, he writes for Inc. Inc.com is the website, Inc. Magazine. Just before we leave the subject, Jeff, you know, I know that we're kind of talking about purpose in life for people as they move into retirement and they just want to get that monkey off their back. But then once they're free, right, they go, okay, now what? I know that you reference kind of a yardstick or a measuring point for these. Once somebody kind of figure out what they're supposed to do for the rest of their life, people tended to come up with kind of like some core pursuits that they would have.
Yep. Yeah, it was and what's odd is that, although I don't know how you have half a pursuit, the average number of pursuits people had was 3.5.
Okay.
So I guess you can have 3 or you can have 4 or something like that. But pursuits didn't have to be something huge and life-changing and transformational or anything. It could be volunteering, traveling, teaching, you know, walking every day, just different activities that you felt good about and that made you feel good about yourself and that you were still actively trying to do something with.
Yeah.
The key was that, you know, they kept you active. I know, I hate that phrase because it makes it sound like, you know, it's difficult to stay active. But it was things that made themselves feel good about themselves and their lives. And isn't that what we all want?
Sure.
And that doesn't end when you retire.
Right, exactly. And it doesn't, I know what you mean by calling it an, you know, activity. It's like, okay, you know, walk the old person down the street and back.
Right.
That counts as an activity. That's not what we're talking about here. And, you know, to your question about three and a half core pursuits, I think that maybe that's the three you do today and the half of one's maybe the one you're going to do tomorrow.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. And then to put a bow around it, there was a couple of things I thought were interesting in what you wrote is a lot of them live in the city and suburbs. And that one surprised me because I was thinking that people would be like, hey, not only get me out of this job, but get me out of the city and get me out somewhere quiet and relaxing
right,
where I can actually hear the birds chirping and hear the grass growing.
Yeah, it was that surprised me too, but 37% of the retirees that said that they were or that considered themselves unhappy defined where they lived as rural, put quotes around that.
Hmm.
And that's the national average of people who live in what are defined as rural areas is only 16%. So twice as many people as you would think that would be there. So there's something to that. And I think the biggest issue is that you don't have to live downtown in the city, but living in communities or suburban areas or places where there are more people, that means you have more opportunities to engage with people and interact with people and form relationships that mean something to you.
True.
So, you know, the birds and the deer and the squirrels are fun to look at for a while, but they're not great conversationalists.
Good point. Tried to have a conversation this morning with one out on the road for my morning bike ride, and he left. He didn't want to stick around when I went by. So
yeah, that could be more to do with you than really the data, though, but that's okay.
That's true. That is not statistically valid data. All right. And the last one, which was actually another irony or interesting one, is You know, we talk about retirement being the biggest, longest vacation we'll take.
Right.
But ironically, another indicator of happiness or corollary to people happy retirees were the ones that took two vacations a year.
Yep. And what's odd is that they spend more money on their vacations than people that are unhappy. That could be because some of the unhappy folks maybe didn't have the income in order to do that. Or it could be that they're making choices with the money that they have that maybe aren't as positive as they could be. Who knows? But I do think it's true that you don't want to stop and travel. You know, traveling is fun. It's exciting. It can be enriching. It can be rewarding. It can be a core pursuit. It could support one of your core pursuits. It could be part of one of your missions. There's all kinds of reasons for it. But traveling is also social as well. And when you're out and when you're seeing people and meeting people and engaging with folks, I don't know, most of us tend to be happier that way. So for people that are planning to retire, somehow budgeting in some amount of money to be able to get out and continue to see the world and not just sort of restrict your horizons, I think is a huge thing.
I think the flip side of that, Jeff, is people that maybe just hole up in their house or they isolate themselves or become a little bit more of a hermit and, you know, turn off the television and go do something.
Yep. Yeah, and so the kind of the bottom line of this whole thing is that a happy retirement doesn't have as much to do with assets or income, you know, or a big house or things like that. The money side of it is certainly important, but once you get to this little point where it's like quote-unquote enough, then what really matters is what you're doing with your time, not what you're doing with your money. And
good
that's
point.
What's going to make you happy.
Well put, Jeff. And to that point about money, let's use that as a nice segue to talk about the other blog or column you wrote, post. All these terms kind of interchangeable nowadays, if you will. But the other piece of fine writing, we'll call it that, is the 13 great reasons to start your own business. Even if it's just on the side, that could be a source of not only developing your purpose, but also making some money. And maybe you don't want to make the full leap to leave your job that you have now. Maybe you want to do something on the side until you feel comfortable. And this got over 400,000 views, which I think is so cool. So that tells me there are a lot of people thinking of wanting more income or wanting to express themselves or maybe make a job change.
Right. Yep.
Well, okay. So how do people make it happen? What are some of the, what are some of the things that keep people from really doing this? Because I started my own company that, you know, I was like, okay, I know I got to do this. And I did this. I made the leap and left the company I work for, and I started my company and I haven't looked back. This has not always been pleasant because that's the nature of having a small business. But what are some of the things that hold people back?
You and I are similar because I worked for a Fortune 500 company for almost 20 years.
Mm.
And then I kept telling my wife that I, you know, wanted to write. And she finally told me to either put up or shut up.
Right already.
Yeah. And so I gave it a go. And luckily I married way over my head. So we were in a position for me to give that a go. And you're right. It's hard. And sometimes it's much harder than working for someone else. But, you know, you do kind of chart your own future. But I had a zillion excuses for why it didn't make sense for me to try to do something on my own.
Mm.
And I think that's what holds most people back. You look around and you say, you know, like, I don't have the right connections. That's a very popular one. When I go speak, people will say, well, you know, it sounds really great and I'd like to start a business, but I don't know the right people. Well, nobody really knows the right people. And if you're waiting for the right people, you'll probably never find them. But at the same time, if you think about the tools available to meet people now as opposed to, say, 10 years ago, you know, you got Twitter, you got Facebook, which I'm not on, but let's pretend it exists. You got LinkedIn. You've got all these sources for how you can contact people or make connections. So why would that be an excuse, I guess, is my point. If you want to meet the right people, you can. You just have to go to them as opposed to waiting for them to come to you.
Well, there you go. It's that simple, ladies and gentlemen. There you go. I mean, the point's well taken, Jeff. I think that, you know, it's not. It's never too late. And people have concerns about, you know, don't know the right people. They're afraid.
You said the word too late, and that's a big one for a lot of people. They'll say, "Well, I had this idea, but somebody else has already done it," and you know, so they think they have to have this new breakthrough idea that no one has ever come up with. But if you want to start a business, as long as you're willing to try to be faster or cheaper or better quality or better service or in some way better than what's out there, you don't have to be first, because that will probably allow you to be last, which is what you really want to be, is the one
that
lasts.
You know, I like that.
If you think about the big entrepreneurs, you know, Jobs, Steve Jobs, people hold him up as an entrepreneurial giant, and he is, but he didn't invent the mouse, and he didn't invent MP3 players, he didn't invent that, he just made better stuff. There were other social networks before Facebook, but Zuckerberg did better. If you look around at most things, they weren't the first, but they turned out to be the best. So if you look around your town and you want to open a restaurant, there are tons of restaurants. That doesn't mean you can't open one because there already are restaurants. You just have to find a way to make yours different and therefore better.
There you have it.
And if you're not willing to do that, then yes, you probably should not be starting a business.
Agreed. Well, that's right. You have to have the moxie. You got to have the drive to make it happen.
Right.
Jeff Hayden, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to grab a quick break. We'll be right back.
Since 1997, David Holland has built a solid reputation in our local community as an independent financial advisor. Just as important, Holland Financial's professional team has grown to include 3 experienced certified financial planners, a tax accountant, an attorney, 3 chartered financial consultants, accredited asset management specialists, and certified annuity specialists. Our attentive and professional staff gives prompt and individualized attention to each and every one of our clients. Count on Holland Financial for your financial advice, not only for today, but for many years to come. Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And we're back with Jeff Hayden on the line, ghostwriter, speaker, LinkedIn influencer, contributor for Inc. magazine and the book Transform. Dramatically improve your career, business, relationships, and life one simple step at a time. And we're getting little excerpts from all of what Jeff has written in just a couple of recent posts on LinkedIn that were some interesting articles we ran across and kind of digging into some of the reasons why people might not start a business. And then basically where Jeff and I are overcoming them for you, or at least helping you think about them a little differently. And another big one, Jeff, I know that you've heard a lot and I've seen people, this be a real concern for them is, hey, look, I've got this great idea or I want to do this. And someday when I have enough money, I'll do it.
Right. Yeah. But I've seen statistics before that, well, out of the Inc. 5,000, which is the list of the 5,000 fastest growing private companies in the U.S., I believe last year 93% of the companies on that list were started with, I believe it was less than $10,000, and a big chunk of them were less than 5. And then there was some slice of them that, you know, the people had like a couple thousand dollars. So, you know, yeah, if you want to start a car company, you are probably going to need a lot of capital, but if you're going to start, especially a service business,
sure,
you really just need you,
right?
You know, and some basic tools that you already have. You probably already have a computer, you've got a phone, you've kind of got what you need. And if you look at most successful entrepreneurs, they don't look around and say, okay, I want to be in a service business, so I need to have a palatial office, and I need to have the right address, and I need to have all these bells and whistles, because none of that relates to the service that you provide.
Right.
Successful people look and say, okay, what's the bare minimum that I can spend to get myself set up? And then what do I need to do to actually get clients and generate revenue? My favorite saying is that if it's not generating revenue, you shouldn't be doing it, especially if you're starting something.
Mm.
So all that frill stuff,
mm-hmm,
especially if you come from a big company where you're used to having lots of resources,
yeah,
and assets and stuff, it's really hard. But, you know, the reason that there's the stereotypical entrepreneur starts a business in the garage or in the kitchen kind of thing is because it happens all the time. That's not a cliche. That is what people do. So you don't need a lot of money to get going. Someday you may want investors, or you may need it to get to the next level. But by doing something that you can be successful at early on, then you can prove to people who have money that they should invest in what you're doing. And that's the other problem that most people have. They say, well, I've got this great idea, so I'll just tell people my idea, and they will give me several million dollars, mm-hmm, to get it going.
Yeah,
nobody wants to do that.
That'll happen.
Watch Shark Tank. One.
Right.
And you'll see, they don't care about that. Ideas are a dime a dozen. Successful ideas that you are working to make happen, those are much rarer, and that's where you will actually find people that want to participate. You have to prove that you can do stuff. So I know a lot of entrepreneurs that say they are glad they didn't have a lot of money when they started, because it forced them to be creative, yep. It forced them to work through their problems, it forced them to find a better way, and it made them who they are.
Well, it's more important to be able to roll up your sleeves and work at it than it is to have a lot of cash. Because you know what? Unless you have, Bill Gates kind of cash, whatever much cash you got on hand, if you don't really make a go of it and you don't work hard, that cash is not going to be there forever.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
I mean, and the other one, which we'll kind of wrap up with, Jeff, is the other one is people that just don't have time to do it. I'd like to start a business. I just don't have time.
Well, but that's such a weak excuse. I hate to be that blunt, but we all have the same amount of time. So what differentiates us is what we choose to do with the time we have. And so if you really want to start a business, then I say you kind of look at your day differently. You go and say, okay, how much time do I need to put into the business? Chunk that out, and then say, okay, now how do I fit all my other stuff in? Mm-hmm. And it may mean that at night you've got to do some business stuff instead of watching TV or hanging out or whatever it is you do. Might mean you have to work some weekends. Might mean you have to change some things. But if it means something to you, then that's okay. But nobody's going to pay you to replace your full-time job with your business while you get going. It just doesn't work that way. So
yeah, if you're waiting for the right amount, to have the time and all that, that really ends up being a form of procrastination. And I think that's the other side of it. And, we just have to be honest with ourselves. And if you're going to do it, do it. If not, then don't.
Right.
And you too could be the prolific writer that Jeff Hayden is.
Well, that is what it boils down to, though. If you don't feel you have the time and you really don't want to make changes, that's okay. That's fine. But don't sit and then say, I want to start a business.
Amen.
Because you really don't. And that's true in anything you do in your life.
You got it, Jeff.
No matter what it is.
That's it. Jeff Hayden, ladies and gentlemen, he's got your number. He's got the information. Transform, dramatically improve your career, business, relationship, and life one simple step at a time. That's the book. And follow Jeff with all of his writings. And we appreciate having him on the program. Jeff, you've been a great guest.
Thank you, David. Enjoyed it.
Thank you, sir.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.